Thanks for listening to the Dusty and Cam in the Morning podcast, brought to you by your local Les Schwab Tire Centers, where I get my wild country tires. Les Schwab, doing the right thing since 1952.
We're brothers from New Hampshire. We're venture capitalists.
This is Dusty and Cam in the Morning.
Sick of that. Let's be from Vermont, and let's have an emerging maple syrup conglomerate.
With Dusty Hara.
Stupid, we don't know anything about maple syrup.
And NFL veteran Cam Cleland.
I happen to know everything there is to know about maple syrup. I love maple syrup. I love maple syrup on pancakes. I love it on pizza. I like to take maple syrup and put a little bit in my hair when I've had a rough week. What do you think holds it up, slick?
Dusty and Cam on 1080.
I'd like to be pimps from Oakland or cowboys from Arizona, but it's not Halloween. Grow up, Peter Pan.
The Fan.
All right, hour number three, Dusty and Cam in the Morning. Pimps from Oakland. Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson. I don't think they could pull that one off. All right, coming up this hour, we will discuss The Last Dance, complete with audio of Carmen Electra. Weird sentence I never thought I'd be saying. And your statement Mondays from the weekend in sports. But let's talk a little NFL draft. It was a little bit of a surprise. We talked about it briefly on Thursday. The move that the Green Bay Packers made, not just drafting in the first round a quarterback, but trading up to get a quarterback in Jordan Love out of Utah State to be the successor to Aaron Rodgers. And will Aaron Rodgers be willing to be the mentor that Brett Favre was not to him? And Matt LaFleur was asked that question on a conference call yesterday.
I think Aaron's a pro. I can't speak enough about his leadership, his value, his importance to this football team. And he is the one that leads us out there. And I know he's going to be a great mentor. And I'm just, I'm excited to get back to work with all these guys.
He says he's going to be a great mentor.
Ha!
Do you buy it?
I got some oceanfront property in Arizona for you also, too. Yeah. Real cheap.
What about this idea, though, that Aaron Rodgers had always said he wished and hoped that he and Brett Favre had had a better relationship?
It's nice.
But do you think that there could be anything to that where he's like, you know what? I'm regret. Not going to do what Favre did to me.
Maybe. If you know him well enough, okay. Has he ever been the guy that you looks like? Does anybody come out of playing with Aaron Rodgers and tell you that there was some meaningful thing that he made them better, that he did something for them? It was always about what did you do for Brett Favre? What did you do for Aaron Rodgers? How do you help Aaron Rodgers? What do we do to help Aaron Rodgers? Well,
maybe Jordy Nelson.
Even the draft will tell you that the team doesn't even think much. Here's what they've did. Okay, they selected Jordan Love. Oh boy, that's your successor, maybe in 2 years. You drafted a running back, okay, in the second round. All right, then a tight end. Still nobody really that relevant. I'm not quite sure what they were doing. Then they did a linebacker, a guard, a center with Jake Hansen.
Yeah, boy, that was a little, their draft center. Is confusing.
And then they did a guard, a defensive back, and an edge rusher. And drafting one wide receiver. Aaron Rodgers is known for slinging the ball over the yard. They drafted a tight end out of Cincinnati. He's pretty good. He's a good player. I looked at his stats. He's pretty good.
I don't know.
Do they need a running back? Maybe. They didn't draft one wide receiver in the biggest wide receiver rich draft the NFL and all prognosticators have said all time. Didn't get him a wide receiver.
Well, and the running back that they drafted, A.J. Dillon out of Boston College, had like a billion carries. Like he was Boston College's offense. Like, and that is one thing that you look at with running backs coming out. It is like, dude, you do not want a guy like Jonathan Taylor from Wisconsin is one that's kind of a scary pick too, because if you have offenses like Boston College or Wisconsin where they ride those backs into the ground, their shelf life is even more short in the NFL.
But you traded up into the first round to get Jordan Love, which tells you don't trade into the first round if you're trying to get a guy that'll help your team. You're drafting your successor. You're drafting knowing that Aaron Rodgers might not be the guy in a few years, might not be the guy this year because of injury. You're drafting insurance. But when you move into the first round and don't get any current weapons to help you, that's a telltale sign that the Green Bay Packers are tired of. I think the Green Bay Packers are tired of Aaron Rodgers. I think they're exhausted of it.
Yeah, I agree. There is an element of that. And was it Gutenhust? So how do you say his name? The GM. You know, he said that if everything goes according to plan, Jordan Love won't play for a long time.
Yeah. According to plan.
But they didn't draft a single receiver. And that is, that's a huge red flag, especially for a guy that has been asking for, just give me somebody, and you're not going out and you're not doing it in a free agency. And I thought it was a confusing move in a confusing draft for the Green Bay Packers as a whole. Elsewhere in the NFL, though, you saw if you're talking about guys that are going to embrace somebody with open arms, the Philadelphia Eagles in the second round went out and they got Jalen Hurts out of Oklahoma. Jeez. With the 53rd overall pick.
Yep.
And that, to me, I sat there and I went, are we getting a sanctification of the NFL? Because Hurts is a guy, he's drafted as a quarterback. He will be a quarterback at some point. But Philly wants to use him in the same way Taysom Hill is used in New Orleans.
Well, I was listening to Sal Palantonio, who did a great job covering the draft, and he was talking about this right away. He does as good as anybody that covering Philly.
Mm-hmm.
His point was spot on, is that this isn't a backup draft or a backup rule here. This is immediate impact on offense. This is somebody we're going to use. But also, too, remember, if Carson Wentz has only been healthy 1 out of 4 years so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So your return is that the fact you can get a guy that reps that's going to help you not only offensively, but he's going to help you with some more dynamic plays. Maybe he gives you that element, that winning element. And I think that it is a little strange to go and get it. But Doug Peterson, you could see the reaction of all those guys. They were ecstatic about it.
Yeah.
They thought it was an unbelievable pick. They probably felt like, holy crap, this guy's here. I can't wait to take this. And if Carson Wentz looks at it as a deterrent, all right. So he looks at it as a deterrent, or he looks at it as, okay, how do we make this team better? Is this going to be offense with him on the field together, or is this a package that they create with just him? That's the more curious side.
Well, and there is an element of Carson Wentz being in the know about it because of what their plan was and how they're going to use Jalen Hurts. Because, you know, a few hours after the pick was made, Wentz sent out a tweet kind of stamping it out saying, welcome to the family, to Jalen Hurts. And it was like all right, he'd been briefed on what's going on.
Yeah.
We're going to stamp out any of this controversy stuff. And they go and they say that. Also, when I talk about the sanctification of the NFL, do you see who they signed as a free agent, the Eagles? Khalil Tate, as a wide receiver. Mm. The guy who refused to have or threatened to transfer over the Ken Niumatalolo rumors of becoming a head coach because he was a quarterback and he was a passer and he was going to prove it, is now a wide receiver in the NFL.
Okay.
They could have three guys on the field who all play
personal
quarterback.
Offense, right? Philly special.
What'd you think of the NFC West draft as a whole? The Seahawks going out, and Pro Football Focus did their draft grades, which I think draft grades can be silly at times because they never play.
Because they don't make any sense unless you actually know what you're in that draft room.
But I really do appreciate the depth that, and you and I both like what Pro Football Focus does.
Yes.
They gave them a C-.
Yeah.
On their draft because they went Jordan Brooks, which they said was a reach, going 57 spots higher than his position rank.
Right.
Then they went Daryl Taylor out of Tennessee, which also was considered a reach by Pro Football Focus. And then interior lineman Damian Lewis out of LSU, which they promptly cut DJ Fluker after.
Well, they cut DJ Fluker and Justin Britt, but they have 20 offensive linemen on the roster. 20. And then Dwayne Brown. Yeah, they have Dwayne Brown, who's kind of the nice staple on the outside. But they're going to have a big-time competition. Russell Wilson's got to be like, oh, God. Out of 20, can we find five? Actually, just give me four. Can I have three that work?
Yeah, and it was also more confusing what Seattle did when in drafting Colby Parkinson out of Stanford, the big tight end out of Stanford, because that is also a position where they have a log jam.
Yeah, but they're in a log jam of health. Come on, those three guys that they have there that are currently, one is old. Mm-hmm. Greg Olsen is old.
Will Disley hurt.
Will Disley hasn't even made it through a half of season yet in his career. Those guys aren't locked down solid.
They still have Jacob Hollister, too.
Right, and Jacob Hollister was a fine guy. Solid, good player, okay guy. Not going to dominate the edge, not going to light it on fire with catching. And so they need depth. They need reliable depth. And that's a good, it's a solid pick.
But in the loaded wide receiver draft, didn't you think that they might go with, like, especially in the fourth round, go for a wide receiver there when guys like Isaiah Hodgins are still available?
Well, when you end the season with no running back depth. So they got DJ Dallas, and they have no running back depth. Both guys were on IR to end the season. You had to go with Marshawn Lynch. Yeah. And then you went Freddie Swain. I don't know enough about these guys. Look, if they feel, you just try and trust the fact that John Schneider and Pete Carroll are building the way they feel the needs.
Two teams are getting rave reviews, though, out of the NFC West. The Arizona Cardinals get an A+ from Pro Football Focus.
There you go.
The Arizona Cardinals going out, and they get Isaiah Simmons out of Clemson.
Such a great pick. I know. That was a great pick.
Third round, they go and get the tackle Josh Jones out of Houston, who is on most boards the fifth best tackle.
Yep.
They get Leki Fotu out of Utah, defensive tackle. Mm-hmm. Rashard Lawrence out of LSU, defensive tackle. Evan Weaver, the tackle machine out of Cal in the sixth round. And then seventh round, they got Eno Benjamin from Arizona State, which he could be a sneaky good pick there. They're getting an A+. And then the San Francisco 49ers, man, they did it again.
Get rid of all the wide receivers and draft young ones.
They traded Marquise Goodwin. Mm-hmm. Turn him into picks, but then they also made a trade for Trent Williams. Yeah. They turn a third rounder next year and a fifth rounder this year for a Pro Bowl caliber tackle, but who hasn't played in over a year. What did you think of that move?
Oh, I thought it was fantastic. Shows you that they care about their running game, but solidifying the tackle positions, understanding that now you have two great tackles, two solid tackles. Just solid veterans, both of them. I mean, you want to talk about bookends. They have the best tight end in the game. Their running game is going to be solid. Wide receivers, they're like plug and play. You could see it that they have their guys, but wide receivers are going, all right, we're not going to overpay. We're not going to overpay for these wide receivers right now. We're not going to do it.
Yeah, and I think...
Picked up two more.
A sign of a really good franchise is when you are building for the future and it doesn't get out, what's happening in the present, right? So they make the trade for Trent Williams. 12 hours later, Joe Staley retires. You know? Like, to me, I sit there and I go...
Oh, they know.
Yeah, they know, but it doesn't get out. Like, everybody's like, well, how much longer does Joe Staley have? That was the question. Nobody knew that he was ready just to hang it up and go. And
I think they knew. Of course they knew.
Of course, and that's what I'm saying, is that they knew, but nobody else did. And that is a sign of a good franchise. New Orleans Saints with Max Unger last year. Like, they went and they made that signing for a center, and everybody's like, what is going on? 2 days later, Max Unger's like, yeah, I'm hanging it up. I'm retiring. You know? And that is a sign of a good franchise when nothing is getting out, but they're still able to make those moves. You know, the surprise retirements.
I think if you watch football this season, if we're lucky enough to have the NFL, which I know we're going to have the NFL, whether fans are going to be there or not, the NFL is definitely playing in the fall. I can lock that down, put it on the board, put the whiteboard up. I'm sorry, put the post-it note up. It's going to happen. It is going to happen. I can't say that for college football. The two divisions that we're going to watch, and I can't wait to watch. First, selfishly, the NFC West. It's going to be fascinating. It's going to be unbelievable. Arizona's going to be a tough out. Nobody's easy in this division. It's going to be great. The other one, the NFC South. Other than that, I think everything else is chalk.
AFC East will be interesting too. Buffalo, is Buffalo ready to take it over?
It's going to be mediocre, man.
Jets had a decent draft.
It'll be okay to watch.
We'll see what happens there. It's just a change of power. Is there a change of power? Yeah. That's just a storyline.
It's a storyline, but I don't think it's going to be good football. I don't think it's going to. If you mean to tell me watching Buffalo will be exciting, it's not going to move the needle. You'll get more Cincinnati views next year than you will get all of the AFC East.
Yeah.
And if Tua sits, that's even another reason why you're not going to watch.
Yeah. Well,
because nothing is going to be exciting about New England.
Yeah, I'm just saying the change of power may be a fascinating thing to look at.
Sure.
If it happens.
But I think that everything else is chalk in the NFL. Now, hopefully we'll get some interesting pickups, and we get Jameis to the Saints. I mean,
All right. All right, 55305. That is the fan text line. USC also making a little history in the draft this past weekend, as they had two players drafted. They are one of four college programs that has had a player drafted in every modern NFL draft.
It's crazy.
It is. But is it a little crazy to think of who a couple of the other teams are? Because they are, what, Florida?
Notre Dame.
No.
No?
No. Oh. Michigan?
Michigan?
And Michigan State.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Michigan State has had a player drafted in every modern NFL draft. There's only 14. Florida, Michigan, Michigan State, USC. Every single one. And then last year, Nebraska, they lost their streak. There used to be five.
Yeah.
Now they're out of it.
You know, before we do that, my last thought, so 8:17, I thought one of the great spots for Jacob Eason, and the Jake Fromm falling, did that not happen out of nowhere? Bad choice. I thought Eason, although he fell to the fourth round, what a great landing spot for him in Indianapolis. You can just sit there, right there. Easy throws, indoor, great head coach, and sit behind Phillip Rivers. There's going to be no controversy. It'll be quiet. That's a sneaky good football team next year with Phillip Rivers.
Yeah. Jake Luton, by the way, to Jacksonville, too, is a decent spot. He could get a little action, a little bit around there.
Be competitive when Cam Newton shows up there. How about that quarterback room?
Well, how about Jameis getting a job before Cam?
I know.
That's all medical.
Well, the reports are that it is. But it's also reports that Jameis turned down some better offers because he's going to what they're calling the Saints, his quarterback rehabilitation center. Because if Teddy Bridgewater can get 3 years, $62 million, and Jameis does a one-year stint, hey.
Bingo. You know,
it's like Alabama.
Let's talk about The Last Dance. Dennis Rodman is a psycho, and Phil Jackson was just the guy he needed. Dustin Cam on The Fan. All right, The Last Dance, Volumes 3 and 4, released last night on ESPN. F-bombs are flying. Michael Jordan's potty mouth. I loved Vernon Maxwell's tweet last night that said, "Jeez, Michael Jordan's swearing a lot. I'm going to have to change the channel." Coming from Vernon Maxwell, that is a fantastic tweet. Mm-hmm. Which people are like, "Oh, come on, you were way worse." He's like, "I'm joking. Let's be honest here. This is how people are." But I thought it was a refreshing look into how Dennis Rodman became Dennis Rodman. You know, I thought it was pretty interesting that they found the footage of Rodman in the late 80s and early 90s asking if he was kind of the persona that he turned into when he was in college, like a physical, hard-nosed player. And he said, no, not at all. Like, that wasn't the way he played. Chuck Daly made Dennis Rodman Dennis Rodman. I thought it was a phenomenal quote. You don't put a saddle on a horse, on a Mustang, right?
Yep.
You just let him run and you go. And man, that guy was crazy. He has his screw loose, but you saw how special of a talent he is. And I had the question, just kind of going through my mind, how many Rodmans exist in sports?
In what way?
Like they
crazy?
Do their own thing. They're lit. You have a screw loose, and they just, when they go away from the court, they are a completely different person, a completely different persona, and a little bit wild.
I think I admire more types of athletes today the more I look back. I admire more athletes that take their identity of who they are and believe it and don't conform to this supposed way you're supposed to be. You know, there's these coaches and there's these factions of socialists that want, not socialists, I go social media, they want everybody to get into this little pocket, and they want you to, you got to be the ultimate this guy. You know, the identities of everybody, sometimes if you just do you and just amplify it, okay, not everything is perfect. Do I need to be a model citizen? Do I want to go hang out in Vegas and do your deal? That's what made him great. What made him great, what made it separate, is that he was hyper intelligent. He talked about, you heard about how he grew up, how he just sat out and lived outside for 2 years. Homeless. Nobody can relate to that unless they are homeless. And understand is that he said there was just this serenity to sitting out and barbecuing your food out under the stars. And he said that I learned the way he broke down how to rebound There is not anybody in the game today that could do that. Nope. Nobody knows how to do that. There were games, you saw the stats, the trivia, games where he had 20 rebounds, 0 points. Nobody does that. Everyone's worried about their shots now. I got to get my shots, man, my AAU shots. I got to get my shots up. Where's my 18 dribbles, my 15 crossovers, and then I get my shot and turn around. He loved the dirtiness of the game. There's nobody like him.
No, and that is something that I remember I read the book. You ever read his book, Bad As I Want to Be? It was his biography that got put out in the 97-ish. But he talked about that, like, you got a glimpse in that book of his basketball intelligence, but I thought it was so cool to see Michael Jordan saying he's the smartest player I've ever played with. And that probably surprised a lot of people to hear that, but everyone who played with him has felt that way. And you heard so many, you know, distinguished minds in basketball on that documentary talking about how intelligent he was basketball-wise. Mm-hmm. And that to me, I love getting those things highlighted, because all we know is Dennis Rodman, the wild man, the dyeing his hair and wearing wedding dresses and all that stuff. Yeah. He was much more than that, and we kind of laugh at him now, but it is a guy that his basketball IQ was through the roof. Mm-hmm. And then having Phil Jackson with him, it was a perfect pairing to kind of harness the best of him, because even in when he was in San Antonio, they weren't getting the best out of him, you know, and you needed somebody like Phil who understood his brain, and calling him, you know, the Ayoka, mm-hmm. who is a backward walking person in Native American culture. And that connection there was he needed a guy just like Phil Jackson.
He needed love. That's what he did. You could see the difference when he talked about when Scotty was out and how Michael Jordan talked to him and how he said, hey, this is what I want. He didn't grow up with a dad. He didn't grow up with that connection, that love and partnership that comes from family. That's what he's always been looking for. You could see it. I'm no psychologist, but I can read it when you see it, is that you knew that he appreciated and valued the relationship that he had with Phil Jackson.
Yeah.
It was about, this is somebody that appreciates me for what I have and what I bring, not what I don't do and what's wrong with me, and amplifies that and the appreciation of it too. And everybody knew it. Every time they say it, he said, you saw what Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen did. Then you bring in Dennis Rodman and made them unstoppable.
Yep.
Couldn't beat him.
No, you couldn't. And then, you know, having a guy who was unstoppable like that, and when you mentioned when Pippen came back and he needed that love and it went away, that's when it led us to probably the most outlandish part of the Last Dance last night, which was Phil and Michael Jordan allowing Rodman a 48-hour vacation in Vegas, where Jordan just called it immediately. He ain't coming back in 48 hours. And Jordan having to go and track him down, which led us to this fantastic piece of audio.
Did Dennis come back on time?
Mm-mm. He didn't come back on time. Ready to go get his ass out of bed. And I'm not going to say what's in his bed and where he was and blah, blah, blah.
There's a knock on the door. It's Michael Jordan. And I hid. I didn't want him to see me like that. So I'm just like hiding behind the couch with covers over me. Come on. We got to get to practice.
Dennis came back and joined the team. And that's the way it went that year.
Carmen Electra. Mm-hmm. Jordan goes and just pounds on the door and says, all right, you're back. Let's go.
He goes from Madonna to Carmen Electra.
And he comes out and shows up to practice in pajama pants.
Yeah.
He invented load management.
Yep.
And what he ended up doing was, I love the story immediately following that about the, what Phil called the Indian run, where you have the one guy in front and then the guy at the back of the line has to go and chase him to the front. And Jordan was like, everybody, we're taking it slow. We're not running because of Dennis Rodman. And Rodman was in perfect shape, hungover off of a 60-hour bender. Yeah. And he just went. He was a workhorse. He was a maniac, man.
He was.
He played like it and he lived like it.
You got to appreciate somebody that just, he didn't care. He didn't care. You could see it. He didn't care. The way he talked to fans, though, the way the kids, he was handing shoes and jerseys. He loved the game and still does, but he just didn't worry about it.
And that is
when Craig Sager walked by and gave him $20 to pay for his fine. This guy just wants something from me.
He wants the interview. He wants the interview. And then Gary Payton using the F word like a poet and talking about how Rodman is just a pest. Like, that's what I love about this documentary is that you sit there. Is there a better person to get that soundbite from than Gary Payton? Gary Payton, one of the best defenders to ever play in the NBA, is talking about the defensive prowess and praise and how he was awestruck in the way Dennis Rodman defended. That's where all these soundbites and the 100+ interviews that they did, they come to life in instances like that. I love the fact that you hear it from these guys in kind of making of their stories.
And I know there's that element on Rodman, but I always knew Pippen was a good defender. I didn't really realize that series between the Lakers and Bulls really shifted when Pippen started picking up Magic full court and no one else really could.
That is the other storyline of this, of last night, is Scottie Pippen is getting a lot of praise in this. And I think that that's really fascinating that Pippen's instrumental to the 97-98 Bulls because of how much time he was away from the team. But I want to get your thoughts on this of Michael Jordan getting the most out of him, because there was an audio clip in the visuals of it were just as good as the audio, but Jordan explained how he got the most out of him in that relentless kind of work ethic made Pippen thrive. After Buck with SportsCenter. All right, The Last Dance Volumes 3 and 4 last night on ESPN and ESPN2. We were talking about Dennis Rodman, and one of the cool things that The Last Dance is doing is it is setting the stage for the 98 run by showing the backstories like Scottie's migraine game in Game 7 in 1990, in Dennis Rodman, in his out there ways of thinking, and how the connections were made and how relationships were built. And I thought one of the most poignant ones of last night was Michael Jordan talking about how after getting beat up time and time again by the Detroit Pistons, he needed to get the most out of Scottie Pippen.
Pippen became my focal point.
More than any other player, Scottie benefited from playing with Michael Jordan because Scottie had this raw athletic ability. What he didn't have was what Michael brought every day, which was the drive to be the very best every single day. The mental focus of the game.
Come on, people. I gotta get up. I gotta get up.
The thing about Pip is, you know, if you stand next to him, you make him stronger. All the Detroit times when Rodman wanted to pick on him, he needed someone there to stand there and say, hey, look, I fight with you, just fight. Scottie and I bonded, you know, because he felt like, okay, he has someone that he can count on. And I'm looking at, okay, I got someone who I can actually count on. And then Horace came right behind that.
And Horace Grant being kind of like an enforcer behind it. And then the fact that Michael Jordan showed up the day after getting eliminated and gained 15 pounds in an offseason going into his seventh year.
Yeah.
Like, that is an impressive, like, form of leadership that you rarely see in or talked about in sports.
Rarely. We've never seen it. It's not just rare. It's never happened.
What do you mean by that?
Well, it's him. That's it. There's no comparison when it comes to there isn't. He's the greatest basketball player beyond what we think. There's nobody close. LeBron's not close.
Absolutely.
LeBron's not even in the same stratosphere. Kobe's, in my mind, is closer to Michael. Kobe.
Yep.
The more I've appreciated Kobe, the more I think LeBron's unbelievable. He's great. Kobe's better. I think Kobe's better. I think LeBron's amazing. Nobody's close to Michael Jordan.
But the LeBron thing, like, LeBron's body has shifted and changed, but it's all been for himself.
Well, yeah.
Right? And Michael's was for himself, but he knew that for Scottie to buy in as well, it was for Scottie to change his body and transform.
Yeah, if we want to look at great player, and that's why I use the Kobe example, but who has LeBron elevated like that? Who has LeBron James created in a teammate? And that's the difference, is that Michael Jordan, as much as you want to say he was selfish, he was about team, along with Phil Jackson and around that, and that's what made it so great. LeBron's never had a Phil Jackson. That's one of his biggest, I'd say, I don't think he believes it as a regret. I regret, no, LeBron doesn't give a crap about me, but I agree with the fact that LeBron's never had a Phil Jackson.
Well, LeBron has not allowed anybody to become that close to him either. And Phil Jackson is just as rare as Michael Jordan is, because you heard in that backstory of kind of his route in his kind of mental makeup, there's very few coaches that can have the X's and O's and the ability to be such an in-game strategist and be the relationship guy that Phil Jackson was.
But he's never had, and that's the thing is there's Kobe been great coaches. There, behind great dynasties, there's always great. I mean, Pat Riley, Lakers. Mm-hmm. You see Phil Jackson. Steve Kerr is going to go down in this is the part of it, understanding why Golden State was great, because you could see it. There's just no comparison to finding that connection of a great coach. But Michael Jordan is he's unquestionably the most competitive athlete in the history of sports. Unquestionably. The more we get to see as this starts to play out, he wasn't ever going to be, even from practice, watching what Doug would do to him in practice. Nope, you're going to go with the second team. And he's like, no, you're going to beat me. I'm going to be the best. He's telling his coach at North Carolina, no, I'm going to be the greatest ever. I'm going to outwork everybody. It's just not possible today. Just not.
Well, couldn't you say that kind of LeBron did that too, though, in that he had the king tattooed on him, and he said he was going to be the best, and he's been dragging teams at the NBA Finals.
Oh, yeah, no, but what LeBron James is, it's just different. It's just different. There's a different feel to what he's done, and nothing but respect to LeBron James, because he's a top five athlete of all time.
Yeah, and I think that what you go with is like, I think that LeBron has made his supporting cast look a heck of a lot better. Just look at what Cleveland was but when he was there the first time and when he left, and then Cleveland now after he left. But it doesn't, his making guys better on the floor is not, and to your point, it's not like what Michael Jordan did, which was, and he's talking about he needed to make Scottie Pippen tougher. And by winning over Scottie, he literally wanted to fight for him to make Scotty want to get that fight out. And then Scotty did become a killer in 92. I mean, he went to extreme lengths that I don't think LeBron would go to. And I don't think Kobe is the closest thing to that mentality, but I don't think Kobe went to those lengths either that Michael Jordan did.
No, probably not. But they had the similarities are right there. Who did Kobe elevate in all that group? But that's just, I mean, what was the Batman? Shaq kind of, Michael never played with a Shaq. I mean, Jordan was that.
Well, he had Scottie Pippen, Dennis Rodman, which are two
the
bona fide
roles
Hall,
so
Hall of Famers.
Yeah, so great.
But what I think that, you know, film was never able to get through to Kobe, and he got through to Jordan, and I thought it was great. They highlighted this was the kick out to Paxson.
Yeah.
Where Jordan was that selfish player, and he was like, no, I'm going to do it. Doug Collins, he just told me, go and be Michael. And then kicking out, he was like, oh, I can just go to the lane and everybody's going to collapse on me and I can find somebody else. And it resonated with him. And I think that is something that getting through to a player and being like, dude, hey, if you do this, it'll work. And it did resonate with Michael. That's rare in its own right.
Yeah, that's what makes it so great.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal doc, and the fact that the Pistons are being showed at the Bad Boy Pistons being the most hated team, going 30 years and still having a grudge, like Horace Grant.
I love that.
Michael Jordan have been wronged yesterday by them.
I love it.
It's fantastic.
I don't have to be friends with you. It doesn't have to be nice. We don't have to all get along. You got to hold that. Hold that fire. That grudge is what made that rivalry so great. That doesn't just leave you. If those guys got on the court today, yeah, there'd be a lot of injuries, but they would still just beat the crap. Like Bill Laimbeer, listening to him this morning, he's like, just salty, bitter. I'm tired of all this nice, and everybody needs to get along and be friends and AAU. I absolutely think it is one thing our sports miss is grudges.
There's
and competitive nature where it doesn't have to be a nice off.
The 5 minutes where it starts with Horace Grant, or it starts with the Pistons leaving the floor with 8 seconds and not shaking hands.
Yeah.
And then Horace Grant, they said, how do you feel about the Pistons? And Horace Grant goes, they were bitches.
The greatest quote of the entire doc so far.
And then the documentary filmmaker looking and trying to hand a phone to Michael Jordan and say, do you want to hear what Isaiah had to say? And
he's like,
there's nothing you can tell me now that can convince me he's not an a-hole.
Yeah.
No wonder they didn't want him on the Dream Team.
No.
The Celtics hated him.
Everybody hated him.
Larry Bird hated him. Magic Johnson might be the only guy who liked him because of the All-Star game. Remember the kiss at the All-Star game?
Yeah.
But other than
Magic loves everybody.
Scotty hated him. Jordan hated him. Everybody on that Dream Team hated Isaiah Thomas.
My other favorite quote of the documentary so far was from Doug Collins when he asked what he had drawn up on that play. It was like, yeah, get Michael the ball and everybody else get the F out of the way.
Wow, what great coaching. Seriously, if you have a Michael Jordan, it's like, hey, what's your play call? Get it to Michael. Get the hell out of the way.
You know what I also think is being a little bit swept under this today because it happened so early in last night's episodes was the Craig Elo guarding Jordan and Jordan saying, oh, it should have been Ron Harper. And Ron Harper being like, yeah, it should have been me.
I said I wanted to guard him. And when he told me it was Elo, I was like, yeah, F this.
He's like, all right. Craig Elo.
Back to your point on Jordan being one of a kind. Were you guys as kind of taken back by Will Perdue's comment? It's the only thing I've heard Will Perdue say in this whole documentary. But when he said it was shocking to see Jordan have emotions after they won the title,
He thought he was a cyborg.
That is wild. Yeah. The people that were closest to him every day, they didn't even realize he was human. Mm-hmm. They didn't even realize he was human. Crazy. 55305, that's Fan Text Line. Final thoughts on The Last Dance and get you set for the day and the week on The Fan. Dusty and Cam. All right, final thoughts on The Last Dance, Volumes 3 and 4. Hey, Lewis and Clark College up in Lake Oswego making an appearance as the practice site for the Bulls. Amazing. And then before things went bad between Scotty and Jerry Krause, how about the dancing scene?
That's right up there with
Mark Madsen.
Yeah.
Mark Madsen dancing. Bad.
They're like, Jerry, sit down. Stop it.
Jerry, sit down, Jerry. Sit down.
Yeah, and he was so awkward. Just bizarrely awkward.
He's like a human bowling ball.
Like just physically, the way his just there's a lot of things going on.
Comedian Jenny Johnson on Twitter said Jerry Krause looks like a little kid drew him.
Yeah.
And I was like,
yeah, that's about
right. That's actually right.
It's about right.
But is Krause escaped a lot of criticism during that show, during 3 and 4, until the very, very end when they outed him for what a dumb move right before the All-Star break to go public with Phil Jackson will not return.
Just a total spineless little nerd move. Just a straight little spiteful nerd move. Just the power move. Like talk about trying to how do you sabotage your team like that publicly?
You're Jerry Krause.
No, I know that, but I just, what goes through your mind that much?
I think he thought he was like making the power play. Like I'm in charge here. This is how it's going to be. And everyone's like, I don't think you get it, man. He's Michael Jordan. He's going to dictate the terms here.
Right.
He deserved more credit than he got, but he also wanted way more credit than he ever deserved.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah,
like that is.
He made some good moves, but that
he made some great moves.
No, he made some good moves.
The Charles Oakley trade and drafting Scottie Pippen moves. And trading for Scottie Pippen in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, he did
good moves.
Yeah, he was a good architect, and then pushing Phil Jackson into the head coaching role. I mean, that was a brilliant move.
Yeah,
but we had a text that came in that said, you know, this is something that a lot of people aren't really thinking about because it's very local, and why would they put it in The Last Dance? This text is, people act like the Blazers were an afterthought during this time. They played the Pistons and the Bulls in the finals, but lost that team. It's so underrated. It's amazing. Well, that is still the heyday of the Portland Trail Blazers.
Yeah.
But when you put it into perspective and watching this documentary, you go, oh dear God, you lost to in the finals in 90, the Pistons team that the Bulls could not get over the top against. And then you had the Bulls waiting for you when the next time you got there.
Yeah.
And that, that
Eastern Conference is just, it's crazy how much it shifted. But the Eastern Conference was, other than the Lakers, because, you know, you had the Lakers.
Yeah.
The Eastern Conference was just mutants.
Well, how about, that was one thing that was impressive. Like, you forget, you know, talk about lost teams. How about the Indiana Pacers when they showed Reggie Miller crossing up Michael Jordan in 97-98? That team was loaded, too.
What about Reggie Miller stating, if I saw Michael Jordan on the street, I'd punch him in the face? Talk about guys that holding grudges. They all are just salt, just massive amounts of salt throwing over their shoulders. Yeah, and you said that, too. Cleveland was good. How good was Cleveland when Michael Jordan had to make the shot over Elo? The Celtics. You had the Sixers with Charles Barkley. Of course, Detroit. And here's a murder's row of great teams. And then you get into the 90s, and they're all good. I mean, they're all good. The Magic is good. These teams are just ridiculously good. And out west, you're going, I guess.
Lakers and the Blazers.
No, I mean, but once you hit the 90s, it was everybody's in the west that's going to eventually lose to the team in the east.
That 97-98 Pacers team had Reggie Miller, Mark Jackson, Jalen Rose, Chris Mullin, Antonio Davis, Dale Davis.
That's real good. That's real good.
Yeah.
It's not good enough.
And the Flying Dutchman, Rick Smits.
Rick Smits.
Yeah. That was kind of striking. Whoa. But that Pistons team in the finals, Blazers lost 4-1. It was not, didn't look like it was a tight series.
No.
But they lost by 6-3-2.
Were you also
pretty close series?
I know. Were you also amazed with the basketball scores sometimes? Like
I wrote 80, that down,
82-70.
Yeah,
some of the way it was played, where you just the game stopped. The guys weren't shooting. Nobody shot threes.
Yeah,
you just didn't shoot threes. You pounded it inside. You drive to the basket. You go to the free throw line. You pound it inside. You drive to the basket. Stop. The games just weren't high scoring. And then Michael Jordan would average 38. Stupid.
So. Western Conference teams, we had a texture say the Rockets. Rockets were good.
Yeah, they were only good because Michael Jordan played baseball.
Well, no, they were good.
They would
in their
not
own
have
right.
won two championships well, without Michael Jordan playing
but,
baseball.
But they had they were good in their own right. The were Suns good. Were really good in Suns the good. Early 90s too. Yeah. The Lakers, yeah. the Blazers, the Sonics.
Sonics went to the finals.
Yeah.
Jazz. We're good about the Utah Jazz. How good they were.
I hated the Utah Jazz. Seeing Greg Ostertag's face upset me last night.
Hate those uniforms. Hated those uniforms.
And then also, don't forget the Dikembe Mutombo-led Denver Nuggets, too. They were good.
They were. Yeah, they knocked off the Sonics. First round. Robert Pack.
Mm-hmm. The Pac-Man. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's it. This show flew by. So that's what happens on a Monday when you have sports to talk about.
Sure. I'll see you next Monday.
All right. We have got The Herd with Colin Cowherd, 9 to noon. Noon to 3, Dirt and Sprague. 3 to 7, primetime. Isaac and Soup. We'll be back tomorrow, 6 to 9 a.m. It is homeschooling at 8 a.m. So get ready for it. And plus, got a ton of draft leftovers as well. Have a great Monday. We'll see you Tuesday. This is Dusty and Cam.